A Suburban Home Companion, coming to you from the down-home roads of Long Island, where all the men are overworked, all the women have breast cancer, and all the children do drugs and have unprotected sex. We're coming to you from the WGBB ballroom, soon to be leveled and turned into a Walmart. And we're brought to you by Halliburton Biscuits. Doesn't matter what brand you buy, what store you buy them from, you're eating Halliburton Biscuits. With a little bit of oil in each bite, Halliburton Biscuits, now on sale at the Grumman Cafe. Just look for the little pink slips in the windows. Tonight, on A Suburban Home Companion, we're being preempted by another little show, something called Dave's Gone By, hosted by a Jewish person. They have those in Long Island, too, I suppose. His name's Dave Lefkowitz, and he does the same thing we do, only more deranged and depraved. He won't only bugger the sheep, he'll marry them. So stay tuned for the Dave's Gone By show. Good night, and God bless.
The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Dave's Gone By. 90 minutes of comedy, music, talk radio, skits and sketches, fits and kvetches. Last week was our first week back after summer vacation. Still a little rusty, still getting the squeaks out of my hinges. But boy, this week we're on all five burners, and what a show we've got. Or actually, I've got. I'm Dave. Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, theater critic, journalist, humorist, and host of this show. It's called Dave's Gone By, and we're on every Monday night from 6:30 to 8 p.m. We used to be on weekends. That was great. Now we're in the big time, the bigger audience, the stronger signal, and it's even better. Especially since you can listen both on the radio and on the internet. I'm not sure why you'd want to do both, maybe to achieve a bizarre kind of stereo, although I think the 10-second delay might make that difficult. But if you're not on Long Island, and or your radio signal is just scratchy and awful, don't despair. Go to my website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By, and click on the link for the radio station. It brings you right to the Listen Live page. Just click on the red underlying sentence where it says Listen Live on the Internet, and do just that. hometown.aol.com/, Dave's Gone By is the website. WGBB is the station, and if you can't hear the show online, if it's not streaming properly, please let me know. My computer at home gets it on Internet Explorer, but not Netscape, so you might have to pick one browser over another. But you should be able to hear this program clearly and in its entirety. As I said, if you can't, I need to know, and the station needs to know as soon as possible. But what you need to know is that Dave's Gone By is a weekly program mixing humor, music, talk radio, serious discussion. It's a little bit of everything. And this week, oh well, you picked the right episode to tune in. Of course, we'll have The News Gone By, our weekly look at events in the news from a sarcastic, sometimes sarcastic perspective. We have a special guest who'll be talking about one of my favorite subjects, folk music, and how that changed over the past century into the hybrid form it is now. Really fascinating stuff. A professor from Sweden, in fact. We also have a little poetry, don't worry, not so artsy-fartsy, short poems, haikus. And the best part is, they're all about Long Island. We're also going to pay a musical tribute to the change of seasons, say goodbye to summer and hello to autumn, and a musical birthday salute to one of my absolute favorite artists, Nick Cave. Somehow, we're going to fit all of this in 90 minutes. All this plus a disclaimer. Since we're now on in the early evening, when kids are home avoiding homework or cramming junk food into their festering little hate holes, I do have to let you know that this program is rated DGB 13. That's our equivalent of PG-13, so we're nothing obscene or FCC-21, but still, if you have impressionable listeners, they won't be impressed. So keep it on WGBB or AM 1240 WGBB.com until I release you to your captors. We'll be right back with a 45th episode of Dave's Gone By, Fall Guy, and we'll fall back just a moment or so from now.
Go back 10 years ago.
Child got a loophole around the finger. Halo rings ahead. Cornhusk hair makes me linger. Who can't spare meat my dare? A man can't grease my stare. Gonna be my wife. She's gonna be my wife, gonna start my life, she said.
Go back 10 years ago, sunbeams everywhere. Go back 10 years ago, sunbeams fill the air. To flame.
one hasn't got the time. Or the waiting game. The days disappear. They disappear from view. September. Disappear down to a precious few. September. Precious days. I'll spend them with you. These precious days. I want to spend them. Yeah. couldn't tune this song. Precious days.
Precious days indeed, precious last dwindling days of the summer, last day of the summer, and doing this little autumn musical tribute and farewell to the summer days. Started with Captain Beefheart up top, literally up top. He's the guy who does our theme song every week, Tropical Hot Dog Night. You also heard him doing an early piece called Autumn's Child. That's off a collection called Captain Beefheart at His Best, which is a bizarre renaming of what the album was originally called, Safe as Milk. I don't know, there must have been some contractual weirdness at Buddha Records at the time, but either way, that was Autumn's Child leading into Lou Reed doing his version of the Kurt Vile September Song, September Song, off a CD called September Songs by a whole bunch of different cool and hip artists, among them Kurt Vile himself, who does Makit Messer. It's worth getting the CD just for that, to hear Vile do his own Song of Mack the Knife. Anyway, wanted to just mention a couple of things about this change of season, aside from the fact that almost everybody I know has a cold of some sort, or a weird back problem, or some kind of little difficulty that only seems to appear at the change of the seasons. I wonder how people realize it's even a new season anymore. The media and the culture have so blurred the line of what the weather and what calendars for thousands of, or hundreds of years have been telling us, that I wonder how they even know the season's changing. It's, you know, remember when school used to start in September. It's just starting to get a little bit cooler, and school would start. Now, college especially, they begin classes the second week of August. You're sitting there, it's hot, it's 95 degrees, there's bees and wasps swarming around. You're sitting in your classroom, and you're wondering, by the time September rolls around, you're already into midterms. So that always struck me as weird. And of course, you know, they used to start advertising for Christmas just after Halloween. Now it's before Labor Day. Then they start doing the stuff on Home Shopping Network and things like that. I miss that real delineation of seasons. But if we are going to have them, fall is my favorite. And perhaps I'm just being nostalgic for something that I don't even have or know, but it's that feel of a New England college, you know, on a fall day with the leaves changing and that fall windy bite in the air. You still get some warm days, but the oppressiveness is much less, and the evenings really start to cool down. And I think the thing is that, you know, poets and other people like that have made winter the metaphor for death, and a lot of people see fall as the harbinger of that. But for me, it's not so much about dying as about transmutation, things changing, colors, all different colors. It's a regrouping, a restarting. You start school again. A lot of jobs start hiring in the fall, and people seem to want to get a new start on things at this time of year. Now, granted, no one would trade a night in June for an average night in mid-December, but still.
Autumn in New York, why does it seem so inviting? Autumn in New York, it spells the thrill of first nighting. Glittering crowds and shimmering clouds in canyons of steel. they're making me feel I'm home. It's autumn in New York that brings the promise of new love. Autumn in New York is often mingled with pain. Dreamers with empty hands, they sigh for exotic lands. It's autumn in New York, it's good to live it again.
It's almost 7 o'clock on WGBB AM 1240 Freeport and AM 1240 WGBB.com, which means it's time now for the news gone by. Yes, a look at events of the past week from an autumnal perspective. Well, the big news this past week, of course, Hurricane Isabel. Long Island got off easy. I know there was some flooding in certain areas. One off-duty police officer drowned at Long Beach. Another guy died when the gusts of Isabel broke off a tree branch and speared it through his windshield. The victim's last words were, "Well, if I knew she was blowing that hard, I would have steered clear," which, oddly enough, were the opening words of Bill Clinton's farewell address. But seriously, the former president has co-authored, or at least put his name to, a new cookbook. The Clinton Presidential Cookbook, I'm not kidding, co-written by Shannon Butler, features 250 recipes by celebrities, politicians, and Bill and Hillary. The book's publication is something of a vindication for the ex-president, since the publisher rejected Clinton's first cookbook idea. It was co-written with Monica Lewinsky and titled Eat or Be Eaten. As for Hillary, she visited Capitol Hill last week. She was there to support creating a 211 phone number, which people could call for non-emergency governmental services. Actor George Clooney was also there to support the idea. Now, Hillary thanked everyone for attending, but had a special thank you for the actor, once named People Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive. Newsday reports that Hillary said, and George Clooney, what can I say? At least, what can I say in public? Everyone laughed so hard they didn't hear the rest of her comment, do you have a sister you could introduce me to? Well, bad news for subway riders. A study by the Strap Hangers Campaign has shown that at least 30% of the time, train announcements are either garbled or non-existent. Asked for the reason, the head of the Transit Authority told Newsday, thank you very much. Some census news. A study by Columbia University has found that in the last decade, the number of Mexicans in New York has more than tripled. More than 60% live in either Brooklyn or Queens, and 40% of them share the same apartment. No, but seriously, Mexican men have the highest employment rate among major ethnic groups, although 20% are stuck in low-paying service jobs. That said, most Mexican men in America would be willing to work late hours and weekends if they didn't have to swim home. In art news, last Monday in London, musician and avant-gardist Yoko Ono restaged one of her most famous works from her early days. Four decades after its debut, Yoko revived the legendary Happening, where she stands alone on stage in a cloth garment. Since the theme is vulnerability, she then invites members of the audience to take scissors and snip off pieces of her clothing until she's completely nude. The original title of the work 40 years ago was Cut Piece. Those who participated this time and saw Yoko naked say it's still powerful, but should now have a new name. Ugh! Time for some local news. Two police officers in Rockville Center got lucky during a routine inspection of a rental truck. When the driver gave inconsistent answers to their queries, the cops searched the truck and found more than 900 pounds of marijuana. The driver was arrested and charged with first-degree criminal possession. Asked what tipped them off, the police admitted it wasn't just the questioning. After following the van for several miles and smelling the exhaust fumes, both officers started feeling incredibly hungry and groovy. Also on the island, a 30-year-old worker at the Jet Ready Mix concrete plant in Ronkonkoma died last week. He was lubricating the gravel hopper while standing inside the gravel hopper. Unfortunately, the gravel hopper was still on at the time, thus burying the man in a ton of grit and gravel. The man did have a sense of humor. Apparently, he's asked for his headstone to read, and I thought sand in my bathing suit was annoying. On the terrorism front, yet another new audio tape from our friend Osama bin Laden surfaced this week. As usual, he called for the destruction of America by global acts of violence. And again, he called for the most brutal, heartless, ruthless, and brainless young men to join his forces. However, instead of Al Jazeera TV network, this tape was mailed to Long Island and addressed to the Mepham High School football team. Well, you remember that story from last week. Responding to the scandal involving three players on the Mepham squad being sodomized with broomsticks by their teammates, the school handed out five-day suspensions to the accused. Oh my. They also canceled the school's entire football season because the whole group was at fault for knowing about the incident but keeping it a secret. Did the players and cheerleaders and students at the school come out in support of the victims? Did they start up a fund to pay the doctor bills or the psychiatric fees? No. Did they pitch in to buy a basket of flowers and soothing rectal ointment? No. Did they rally around the janitor take him to the local hardware store and get him a couple of replacement brooms. No. What did they do? They staged a morning rally on the football field in support of the team as a protest against the season being voided. One father, whose son took part in the rally, actually condoned the sports team's wall of silence. He told Newsday, quote, "A lot of people know who did it, and no one is going to tell. Why should my son be labeled the rat of the whole town?" Maybe because his father's the moron of the whole district. I think the school is absolutely right in being punitive of the Ream team. I think these football players, who will all probably grow up to be policemen, will never understand that there are worse things than being a whistleblower. And I think it's great that these muscle-bound mooks will be deprived of the one thing they'd actually be able to brag about when they're 50. Instead of lounging around the barbecue with their beer guts, feckless children, and battered wives and saying, "Oh, remember when I made that catch on the 40-yard line and ran it back with a game-winning touchdown?" They'll say, "Oh, remember when I sat at home and watched Trading Spaces all day with my grandparents? What a year that was." Continuing the news gone by, can't do this segment without at least one story from the syndicated Weird But True column published locally in the New York Post, and we have three. First one, a woman was feeding her toddler from a can of Campbell's chicken noodle soup when she noticed something in it that wasn't chicken or soup. Turned out to be a tooth, an adult molar. Now she's suing the company, of course. Her lawyer told the judge, quote, "Here's a woman who can't eat soup. Her family can't eat soup, and, to be honest with you, I haven't eaten soup since this happened." Campbell's defense attorney countered, "No soup for you!" Another weird but true story, a 28-year-old Chicago man had saved for more than a year to buy his girlfriend a $10,000 engagement ring. He was on his way to give it to her, but stepping out of the taxi, he realized it was gone from his pocket. Undaunted, he went out, purchased a cubic zirconia ring for $40, and asked his girlfriend to marry him with that. And she accepted, which really shows you about true love. They asked her about it, and she said, "Look, strange things happen. Like that time he was sitting next to an Avon lady on the subway, and she spontaneously combusted. I knew he was telling the truth, because when he came home, there was lipstick all over his penis." And yet, one more weird but true entry. John Nunez of Winston, Oregon, was out for a drive singing along with a Justin Timberlake tune on the radio. As Mr. Nunez was joining in on the chorus of "Rock Your Body," a bee flew into his mouth and rocked his body. The 19-year-old panicked, swerved, plunged down a 15-foot embankment, and smashed into a tree. He was okay, although he did break into hives. Yes! Yeah, oh, that sounded terrible. Let's try that again. Yes! Yes! That crazy sound, that crazy swinging sound, it's the comedy bell signaling the Dave's Gone By bad pun of the week. It's a tradition on this program. Every week, we make a play on words so bumbling, so waspish, so beautiful, we have to stop everything and sting you with it. Hence, the comedy bell. And if you want to hear that comedy bell associated with your own business or product or service, why not sponsor the Dave's Gone By bad pun of the week? Just imagine the hundreds and maybe thousands of other people listening to this very program, soaking in every word, believing everything I say, and paying attention when I say that this segment is brought to you by so-and-so, or Restaurant X is proud to sponsor the News Gone By, or the World Weird Web, or the Dave's Gone By bad pun of the week. So if you want to get the word out about what you do or the things you sell, do it here. Call 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com. We'll give you the rate card, a whole spiel, and a zillion reasons to sponsor the Dave's Gone By bad pun of the week. 516-295-1511 or davesgoneby@aol.com. Don't be good. Be ponderful. great headline in Newsday this Friday. I don't know if you saw it. It was on page 4. Big story. The headline read, quote, "School's food sickens pupils." Now, I'm not saying the headline's wrong, but in 50 years of school cafeterias, when hasn't it? Now, that's not news to anybody. A really shocking story would be, "School's food doesn't sicken pupils. Mental illness a possible factor." In music news, Apple Computer's iTunes Music Store may have gotten a little too drastic with their labeling. Users hoping to download George Friedrich Handel's 18th century classic, The Messiah, received a warning that the content was explicit, that it might contain material not appropriate for young children or people with sensitive tastes. An Apple spokesperson called the labeling a mix-up, but I'm not so sure, because the Baroque masterpiece has been so long accepted as a classic, and because most folks only know the Hallelujah Chorus, I wonder if we've been missing something. I have a copy here of a 1987 recording by the London Philharmonic Orchestra. Let's just listen to a random track and see if there's anything in there that could be construed as offensive or indecent. Joe, if you could cue that up, please.
Oh, baby. Oh, baby. Yeah, baby. Give me that love. You looking fine tonight. Rub me with them special oils. Pour the frankincense all down my back, baby. Yeah, yeah. Oh, baby. You can make me walk on water. Yeah, take off them hanger tattoos. I want to see your skin. Pull down those sackcloth panties. Ooh, yeah. Now come on over here, sit on my lap. Let me untie those veils for you, baby. Ooh, girl. You make Magdalene look like a Roman soldier. Shake them things. I was blind, now I can see them. Oh, mama, what you doing now? Oh, yeah, careful, that ain't no wafer. That's my body you eating for real. Now, I want you to take Jesus and stick him between your... All right. That's enough of that. Jeez. Wow. I guess iTunes did know what it was doing. My goodness. Well, anyway, back to the news gone by. Some international news. While the American government raises gas prices, invades Iraq for its oil fields, and destroys wilderness to lay pipelines, other countries take a slightly different approach to the energy crisis. For instance, Norway. On Saturday, homes in the town of Hammerfest on the Arctic tip of Norway started getting power from a giant turbine. The turbine turns through the sea current, which is governed by a lunar gravitational tug. In other words, moon power. A spokesman told Reuters that this is the world's first lunar power grid to follow the natural ebb and flow of tides rather than from an artificial lagoon. Benefits of the system include its minimal impact on the environment, there are no rotary blades to slice up seals and fish, and it's actually silent, unlike typical electric generators. Drawbacks include maintenance, which has to be done by deep-sea divers, and cost. It's estimated people using the plant would have to pay 3 times what they currently shell out for hydroelectric electricity. But that said, the little plant in Hammerfest cost $11 million to build, which means that for the $87 billion taxpayers are being asked to fund the current Iraq war, we could build nearly 8,000 lunar electric plants all across America. That's 160 for every state in the Union. Why George Bush, John Ashcroft, Dick Cheney, and Donald Rumsfeld have paid no attention to potential moon power is beyond me. After all, there's no question they're a bunch of lunar ticks. Sort of. Congratulations to Zenjin Fujinami, a 46-year-old Buddhist monk
who completed a 25,000-mile journey around the Japanese mountains. The excursion took 7 years, and he made it wearing just a white robe and flimsy sandals. According to the Associated Press, the ancient ordeal involves, among other things, waking up at midnight for 100 consecutive days to pray, then running 18 miles, stopping 250 times a day to pray, carrying only candles and a straw mat, and eating only vegetarian food. The ritual dates from the 8th century, but only 46 other, quote, marathon monks have made this trek since 1885. Tradition says, if you embark on the pilgrimage but don't make it, you have to commit suicide by hanging or disembowelment. But no, this guy made it, and asked how he felt about Fujinami finishing this amazing trip. Fujinami's roommate said, oh sure, he told me he was just going out for a pack of cigarettes. And that's the news gone by for September 22nd, 2003. Please send your comments, opinions, and moonshadows to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. That's the address for all snail mail to the program. Letters, money, poems, money, press releases, money. It all goes here. Box 62, Hewlett, H-E-W-L-E-T-T, New York, 11557-0062, or leave a message at 516-295-1511, or you can email me at davesgoneby@aol.com. We reserve the right to read your emails and letters on the air, name withheld upon request. I want to hear from you. A lot of you might be listening in your cars, and you might be tempted to get in touch or leave a comment, but by the time you get back to the house, you're like, I've got too much else to do. But really, it would mean a lot to me to get even more feedback from all of you. Not only tells me what you like, what you're bored by, and what you're responding to, but to show the management at this and other radio stations that there's a devoted audience here, that for all its different segments and goofy guises, there's a real format to this program, and one that works. So please, keep in touch, davesgoneby@aol.com, or check our website, hometown.aol.com/davesgoneby, for more information. So many ways to let me know your thoughts. Telephone, internet, snail mail. I look forward to getting your stuff. But please, no iTunes. I'm iTunes deaf. Back with more stuff after this. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Didn't you see the cool article in Newsday the other day in the Life section? Neat little roundup of all the poets who've been based on Long Island or have ties to Long Island. Everyone from Dorothy Parker to W.H. Auden to current writers Marvin Bell and poet laureate and Pulitzer Prize winner Louise Glick. She actually once visited my high school creative writing class and did a poetry workshop. It was very cool. Thanks, Mrs. Maxwell. Anyway, the Newsday article talked about black poets, famous poets, legendary poets like Walt Whitman, writing in all different styles and methods of verse, except one. They mentioned rhyming verse, free verse, sonnets, limericks even, but not haikus, one of the simplest, most pure and powerful forms of poetry. Not one haiku in the bunch. How could they overlook this classical form of three lines, five syllables, seven syllables, and five syllables in the last line? Well, to correct that omission, I've searched a few libraries and online archives and dug up some wonderful haikus of Long Island poets, past and present. I hope you like them and appreciate their spare, gentle, delicate beauty. Here's one. Driving home from work, cut off by an SUV. Kill, 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 kill! Here's a recent poem from the Five Towns area. New neighbors arrive, black hats, beards, long dresses, wigs. At least they're not schwarz. One female poet writes, my nails, red, dripping, like blood on my fingertips, staining my cell phone. From the male point of view, what is an end zone? It is a faraway place. From Testa Verde. I'll tell you, jerkwad, what's worse than 9/11? The New York Mets are. Another sports poem. Wanna go bowling? I can't, my back. you. F you. No, F you. Children and teenagers are also writing poems expressing their innermost needs and fears. For example, I can't go to school. My friends will make fun of me. Damn you, hair salon. Hey, can you go in and buy us a pack of smokes? That dothead hates kids. Other snapshots of modern teenage life may be found in these haikus. For example, practice tomorrow, scrimmages, tackles, new game plan. Please God, no broomsticks. My boyfriend's so wise. He says if we go real fast, I won't get pregnant. The Long Island haiku captures the essence, the specialness, and monotony of suburban living, such as 100 channels of bad films and home shopping, and not one porno. Listen, officer, there's no trouble here. She fell. She does that a lot. For 35 years, we voted Republican. What were we smoking? Three to Lindenhurst. How much? How much? What machine? Step up, fair my ass! Yes, the Long Island haiku. And since poetry is not an elite club, not just for famous versifiers, if you have a haiku of your own, email it to me, davesgoneby@aol.com. I just might read it on the air, and you could be the next poet laureate of WGBB. I know, it's almost too much to hope for. But really, send me your Long Island haikus, 17 syllables total, 5, 7, and 5, and I will read the best ones on the air in the weeks to come. Email davesgoneby@aol.com or mail them to P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. One last haiku. Let's face it, where would poetry be without an element of the religious, the spiritual? Bless me, Father Jones. You are forgiven, my son. Now take off your pants. Back with more Dave's Gone By right after this. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. If you're a longtime listener to this program, you know that, along with the comedy and the talk, we play a very wide and eclectic range of music. Everything from novelty songs to 80s new wave to 90s rap. But the music closest to my heart remains the singer-songwriter stuff. Rock, pop, folk rock, because, well, probably my adult taste developed from a teenage immersion in folk music. Sure, I got hooked on Bob Dylan, as does any sane person, but before that, I was listening to Tom Paxton, Peter, Paul and Mary, The Weavers, Phil Oakes. I always thought it was easy listening for people with brains. Ah, that's pretentious, I know, but folk music is supposed to be a little pretentious. There's always that element of, I'm hipper than you, I'm poorer than you, I care more than you, therefore I sing. And that's cool, because it's often preferable to the empty-headed, anything for sex and drugs and money credo of rock and roll. But even then, I don't think I'm being fair to the true history and meaning of indigenous music. And that's why I brought in a special guest. I'm very excited to have a musicologist on this program, a man who has truly studied the essence of folk music in America and around the world. He's professor of acoustical music at Sweden's prestigious University of Linköping, conveniently located in Linköping, Sweden, and he's agreed to lecture for a few minutes about the value, history, and importance of modern music for the masses. He's currently on sabbatical in America, where he's working on a monograph based on items found in Tracy Chapman's garbage disposal. So please welcome my very special guest, Professor Jonni Huttunen, musical anthologist. Professor, the mic is all yours. Thank you, Dave. I appreciate the time you are giving me to discuss one of the great joys and passions of my life, the study of folk music. We live in a time when so much music is loud and disposable, polished to perfection in digital studios. It is electrified and electronic, but it has no essence. Not so with the folk music. I'm not saying all folk music is good or authentic, but at least the roots are genuine and the voice is individual. The genetics of folk music are as deep and sweeping as the ocean. We hear elements in the religious music of ethnic cultures, the gospel of American and African Negroes, the homemade songs of farmers and laborers, also the lullabies of children, and from the liturgical hymns of monks to the bawdy shanties of sailors. The word folk, F-O-L-K, comes naturally enough from the word for people, the common folk, just plain folks, folks like you and me. And it is that derivation scholars use to tell a good folk song from a poor one. When you hear the song, does it seem to come from way down inside the artist, so deep, in fact, that it taps into a well of humanity and speaks for all mankind, a whole world of folks, not just a couple of folks here or a couple of folks there. In America, folk music became popular in the late 1950s. Singers with liberal views like Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie survived the Red Purge and were able to influence the next generation. They were cheerful, clean-cut, very white men and women who took it upon themselves to be the emissaries of Zimbabwe chants, Jerusalem ballads, and Yokohama work songs. Much of the way Pat Boone gently ladled race music to an uptight culture, the Kingston Trio, the Chad Mitchell Trio, they spoon-fed a society not yet ready to hear Leadbelly or Blind Willie Johnson. That eventually led to the folk superstars of the 1960s, Judy Collins, John Baez, Phil Oakes, Tom Paxton, and Bob Dylan, who transmuted, some say stole, other people's music into something new and unique. Even if he had never picked up an electric guitar, Bob Dylan would still be the biggest folk icon of the century. Ironically, of course, he was also the downfall of the folk fad. He sensed that while the rock and roll music of the 1950s was often silly and mind-numbing, there was also the potential to expand the horizons. At the same time, folk music was turning into a dead end. College kids made every headline into a musical diatribe, or a carbon copy of a facsimile of a Woody Guthrie talking song. Something had to give, either the rock or the folk. At the legendary Newport Folk Festival, Bob Dylan made his decision. He plugged in his electric guitar and played Maggie's Farm. Pete Seeger went into a rage. He wanted to pull the plug because he felt this music betrayed the spirit and causes of real folk. Bob Dylan said, though, keep the amplifiers on. It's time to go electric and get the folk out of here. Within 2 years, the folk music boom was a bust. In its place, however, whole new genres of folk-influenced music sprang up. Folk rock, rockabilly, country rock, confessional art song pop. It was not until the mid-1980s, with the arrival of Susanna Vega, Tracy Chapman, the Roach Sisters, that America again took notice of the basic elements of song, the undiluted voice, the untempered instrument, the unadorned lyrics, the unguarded sentiment. They proved that, like all great art, nothing beats a great folk song. Now, it would be wrong of me to continue this discourse without giving you a brief demonstration of the elements of a folk ditty. I went out one morning to see my dog was dead. My wealthy next-door neighbor had shot him in the head. Okay, notice all the elements. A very standard opening line. I went out one morning. That makes it authentic. If you say, I went in one morning, that is a total giveaway that you are a fraud. The second line gives you the drama, the tragedy of a life, to see my dog was dead. Lots of animals die in the folk music. Horses, dogs, mules, goats, various birds, and for some reason, ocelots. Now, how did the animal die? The third line begins the social protest. Was it the pollution? Was it depressed over the war in Angola? No. The next-door neighbor, and not just any next-door neighbor, the rich next-door neighbor. A whole panoply of emotional experience seethes to the center of that line. The wealthy man who thinks nothing of killing a defenseless animal. The copper mine owners who vanquish the Joe Hills. The William Zangazingers of this world who eliminate the Hattie Carrolls. The wealthy next-door neighbor who shot my dog in the head. Notice the directness of the murder, not passive like poison, not vaguely amusing like putting Chinese fireworks in the anal cavity. Next verse. I said, "Hey, Mr. Neighbor, why did you shoot old Blue?" He said, "Get off of my property or I will shoot you too." Yeah, conflict. As in theatrical drama and journalism, it is all about the conflict. The working class against the heartless landowner. Notice, the singer calls his neighbor not by his name, but Mr. Neighbor. Even in a rage, even in sadness, his tone is deferential. And being a rational man, he wants a reason. Why did you kill Old Blue? Maybe there was a good excuse. Maybe Old Blue was foaming at the mouth. Maybe he was pooping on Mr. Neighbor's nice lawn. Maybe he was licking himself in front of company. But the neighbor does not answer. He does not explain. He orders the singer off the land at gunpoint. Oh, and before I forget, notice the name of the dog is Old Blue. If you are writing a folk song about a dog, it has to have all, O-L apostrophe, before the name to be an authentic folk dog name. For example, Rover, Fido, Gus, these work only if they are all Rover, all Fido, all Gus, or all Shoshana, or all Didi. Last verse. I dug a great big hole and put Old Blue inside. I sat down in my kitchen and bowed my head and cried. And then I took the wire on which I hang my hats. I went back to my neighbor's house and strangled all his cats. Now this is truly an authentic folk song. Not one, but several dead animals. Righteous revenge against the oppressor, and sheer ingenuity involving wire and the choking of the pussies. I hope you have learned a little about the folk tradition. I want to thank Dave Lefkowitz for giving me the opportunity to talk folk with you. I am Professor Yoni Hutanangi, reminding you to go listen to folk. Immerse yourself in the folk, and get all the folk you can.
Sits by the river. Here's not the water. Sits by the river. Here's not the water. And just wait. By the water.
Nicholas Cave, song on Dave's Gone By, born September 22nd, 1957. So, wishing him a happy birthday, as I said at the top of the show, absolutely one of my favorite singer-songwriters of this era. Believe it or not, I mean, to know his early work and his early years, you would never know he was the son of a librarian and an English teacher. I guess that's what the seeds of the rebellion were right there, because he raised all sorts of hell as part of various bands, basically like Lou Reed, whom we played before doing September Song. Basically, at one point, Nick Cave's entire bloodstream was repumped and replaced over the course of just a few years. So, as he was growing up and hearing all these punk influences coming from London and from America into Australia, where he was, became part of a band called The Boys Next Door, which started getting a cult name for themselves locally, but then they went to New York and London and had a couple of very bad experiences there. Just the audiences didn't build and it was badly managed. And so that split looked like the end, but fairly quickly he regrouped as part of the next band, The Birthday Party, and that eventually morphed into the more mature The Bad Seeds, which is one of the great and unique, most unique backing bands in all of rock and roll. That sound that Nick Cave was getting went from basic recitations and punk angry blasts to a sound that encompassed Delta blues, gospel, folk, hard rock, and romantic ballads. In fact, his most recent work, since he's now married with kids and living apparently very happily in Brazil when he's not touring, is more introspective, almost flowery songs about love and the symbiotic relationship of the sexes. But it can't be denied that his greatest work and his most powerful performances deal with the darkness at the core of the human soul. He even did an entire album called Murder Ballads, which is both frightening and funny, tales of revenge or senseless murder, or just annoying at a person's insides. Perhaps the most enduring song in that vein is a happy little ditty about the electric chair, The Final Thoughts, not a confession, not an admission of guilt, just the thoughts of a man being strapped to the Iron Lady and realizing he's about to leave this earth, but not before he makes this final statement.
I began to walk and chill to objects on the fields, a ragged cuff and a twisted marker, the face of Jesus in my soup, those sinister dinner deals, a meal trolley's wicked wheels, a hook bone arising from my food, all things good or ungood, and the mercy seat is awaiting, and I think my head is burning, in a way I'm yearning to be done with all this weighing up a truth, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and anyway I told the truth, and I'm not afraid to die. Interpret signs and catalog, a blackened tooth, a scarlet fog, the walls are the faintest, blackest kind, they are the sick breath at my hind, they are the sick breath at my hind, they are the sick breath at my hind, they are the sick breath gathering at my hind. I hear stories from the chamber how Christ was born into a manger, like some ragged stranger he died upon the cross, and might I say it seemed so fitting, in his way he was a carpenter by trade, or at least that's what I'm told. I might kill him terrible and clutch his brother's fist, well, I'm filthy by the nitty and nothing to resist. In heaven his throne is made of gold, and the ark of his testament is stone, a throne from which I'm told all history does unfold. Down here it's a mean of a wooden wire, and my body is on fire. If God is never far away, into the mercy seat I climb, my head is shaved, my head is wild, like a mop that tries to enter the bright eye, so I go shuffling and alive, just a hiding death the while. And anyway, I never lie.
I saw the thing coming out of the sky. It had one long horn and one big eye. I commenced to shaking and I said, ooh-wee. It looked like a purple people eater to me. It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
A one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Sure looked strange to me.
One-eyed.
Well, he came down to earth and he lit in a tree. I said, Mr. Purple People Eater, don't eat me. I heard him say in a voice so gruff,
I wouldn't eat you, cause you're so tough.
It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Sure looks strange to me.
One more.
I said, Mr. Purple People Eater, what's your line? He said, eating purple people, and it sure is fine. But that's not the reason that I came to land. Well, bless my soul, rock and roll, flying purple people eater. Pigeon coat, undercoat, flying purple people eater.
We were short, short,
friendly little people eater. What a sight to see.
Oh!
And then he swung from the tree and he lit on the ground. And he started to rock, really rocking around. It was a crazy ditty with a swinging tune.
Sing a bop, bop, a boop, a lap, a loom, bam, boom.
Well, bless my soul, rock and roll, flying purple people eater. Pigeon toad, undercoat, flying purple people eater.
I like
George, flying purple people eater.
What a sight to see.
Purple people.
Well, he went on his way, and then what do you know? I saw him last night on a TV show. He was blowing it out, really knocking him dead. Playing rock and roll music through the horn in his head.
He was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater, and he was written and sung by Shelby F. Woolley, better known as Sheb Woolley, that number one song, which I never realized had quite so many things that you could take a very different double entendre way that probably weren't even meant back then, but sold 3 million copies, making Woolley a one-hit novelty wonder. But he had many other tunes, both serious and silly, on the country charts. Woolley also wrote and recorded under the name Ben Colder such songs as Don't Go Near the Eskimos and the theme song for TV's Hee-Haw. Woolley had roles in more than 60 films, most of them westerns, including High Noon and The Outlaw Josie Wales. Born in Oklahoma 82 years ago, Woolley was also a real-life cowboy, even took part in a week-long cattle drive, and he stayed an actor until the early 1990s, including guest shots on that heavenly haven of senescence, Murder, She Wrote. But after 8 years battling leukemia, Sheb Woolley finally lost the fight, and if his most famous legacy is a ridiculous piece of fluff that still puts a grin on your face, well, millions of people are justly forgotten for much, much less. I also want to say farewell to former Congressman and Supreme Court Justice Theodore Kupperman, who died this Friday at age 83. The New York Times obituary said he was famous for his one-page dissents, quote, usually written with a punchline. His other famous phrase, it doesn't take Gertrude Stein to know that a contract is a contract is a contract. Now, my dad and my aunt both worked in the New York appellate court system, and Judge Kupperman became something of an acquaintance-slash-family friend. A very witty and good man, so I want to wish him a happy afterlife, too. Coming to the end of the show here, so I also want to wish a get well soon to my good friend Scott. He's been battling sciatica the last couple of weeks, which is no fun, because, you know, once you have sciatica, there's no turning back. No, that's not the bad pun of the week. We already did that. But do get better soon, Scotty. And Mom, too. A lot of bad backs twisting around my friends and family these days. Time also for a couple of thank yous. Engineer Joe Salzone listened to his fine program, Your World, with Joe Salzone, Sunday nights at 6 o'clock. And he also has another show, Late Night Sunday Night, from 11 to midnight, but he doesn't care as much about that one. And you can also hear him usually before me on Monday evenings doing WTVB Tonight from 6 to 6.30. So tune in at 6 on Mondays, stay with him, and just cruise right into Dave's Gone By. Also want to remind you to listen to Bonnie D. Graham's show. She's on Friday nights at 6 with Long Island Skating. More thank yous. Thank you also to Engineer Dennis for all his help on the pre-production. Thank you to my amazing wife, Joyce, for doing everything she does so tirelessly, so selflessly, and so well. I want to wish a happy Rosh Hashanah to my folks and all my family and my listening family. Unfortunately, Rabbi Saul Solomon, who usually graces us with his presence at holiday time, couldn't make it this year. He was stuck in Maryland thanks to Hurricane Isabel, or as he called it, Hurricane Izzy. But now his half-price bus ticket is expired, and he refuses to leave until they honor it, so it could be a while before he's back in New York. He's a stubborn man, but I hope we'll get him here for Yom Kippur. Oh, by the way, we won't be on that week. If you're planning ahead, October 6th, Dave's Gone By won't be on, or at least we won't have a new show. I don't know if they'll play a repeat, but it will still be the tail end of Yom Kippur, so I won't be at the station. However, Dave's Gone By will be on live next week, the 29th, and back again for Columbus Day, October 13th. If any of this is confusing, just check our website for all the details of our schedule, plus playlists, pictures, news about the show, information about advertising and sponsorship, or buying cassettes of past episodes. It's all there. hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. I'll read it again. hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. If you forget the URL, even after all these times I've said it, just Google search Dave's Gone By and you'll find us on the first page of listings. And I do want to remind you, please, please, to write to us, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062, and we will put you on our weekly email list. You'll find out when the next shows are and what's coming up and all sorts of stuff and special messages from me. Make sure you send me that email, davesgoneby@aol.com. And please, if you like this show, if you're having fun, if you're enjoying hearing it on Monday nights, tell other people about the show and make them suffer too. Next week, more music, more comedy, maybe even an interview or two. That'll be Monday night, September 29th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. So please, tune in, and drop trow. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. So long, summer, and gone by.
The views expressed in the previous program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff or management or any sane person of this station. You're listening to 1240 AM WGBB. Dave is back in 7 days. Sweet things.